Good morning, everyone. We welcome you today to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. Thank you all for joining us. Our subject today is Doctrine of Atonement, and we are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we will begin with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from the Addenda of Collectania, page 17. There's some excerpts there. There is no power in evil. The reverse is true. God is the power. He is infinite. Then your work is the Christ's power against nothingness. Hold there. Know it, and there is nothing else. Know it is with power, and what else is there? Nothing. Then the work is done. God did it. God's child can never make a mistake, can never lose an opportunity, never cause a regret. His life is bright with abundant goodness, hope and promise. Love has a plan and purpose for everyone to fulfill, and none can escape it or fail to perform the will of God. Trust in God. God is life. God is infinite. Therefore, if we are the image and likeness of infinity, we have no beginning and no end, and are His image and likeness. That is my life insurance. May it be Eddie.
Beautiful. Thank you, Florence. All right, Karen, our watching point.
Watch number 135. Watch, lest you believe that your best growth will come through the effort to treat cases of sickness year after year, like a cook who, once having learned to make biscuits, continues to make them year after year. As a student grows spiritually, the healing should be accomplished from an increasingly higher understanding. It should be done more and more through the Spirit, and less through argument. It should broaden and extend beyond the mere healing of physical ailments. As the student advances in spiritual understanding, less of the human is mixed with his perception of truth. Hence, his work becomes less stereotyped and more inspirational. He regards each case that comes to him as an original problem that he must take up with God. His endeavors gradually outgrow the ideal of simply trying to make mortal man harmonious in the flesh. He seeks to help him to throw off a mortal sense of man, though, of course, healing physical sickness will still remain the most impressive phenomena to convince mortals of the power of mind. If a student is progressing, he will watch lest an over-conscientious sense of duty lead him to permit those in trouble to make such overwhelming demands upon his time and thought that he becomes thought-weary and hence loses that brightness, freshness, and spontaneity of thought that is so essential. Mrs. Eddy once wrote, Jesus did what he saw was best for his own spiritual welfare. No matter if the multitude did throng him, he left them and went up into the mountain to refresh himself. He did not look around and say, just see how many need help. No mount for me today or tonight. He left them and went and returned refreshed and helped them more. End quote. The student should never forget that he must keep his spiritual confidence and expectancy alive. Since it is not the arguments that heal, but the spiritual unction that brings forth expectancy in both the patient and the practitioner. It is expectancy that brings spiritual animus and prepares the way for God's law to operate. God does the healing, and our arguments merely prepare the patient so that God will take him up.
Thank you. All right, comments on that?
Well, expectancy is very important in this, the healing work. If you don't expect God to heal, then why are we even doing this? If you don't expect healing. I mean, I've had to ask myself, and I know you've said something to Mary about, you know, you were asked years ago, do you expect to be healed? And, you know, I've had to ask myself after something, a challenge for a while, is this so long with me that I don't expect it to go away anymore? So that's very important. But I think of Jesus, especially in the show we're watching about Jesus, about how many times he would leave his disciples and everybody, but he had to refresh his at-one-ment with God and know that that's the only power that he needed to maintain, that oneness with God, in order to help anybody. So it's really is important. And I know the thought weariness, arguing, sometimes it is exhausting, and I've made a reality of the condition by constantly arguing with it. So there's a lot here that's very, very helpful.
Yeah, no, that's so true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're arguing with nothing, and you're building it up instead of tearing it down, as Florence so beautifully read in her prayer.
Nothingness. Yes. Yeah. I like this part where he says he regards each case that comes to him as an original problem that he must take up with God. I like the fact that we turn to God immediately, turn to God. And, you know, Mary, what we read this week about Eliza Young, she yes. also said the same thing, you know, turn to God immediately. Because he is the one who has the answer. He is the one, in fact, who heals. It's the Christ within us that heals. So we can't do without that.
Thank you.
Well, and I also love how he looked away from the multitudes, it says. And I feel like the most effective healing work that I've witnessed in my life has been since I stopped focusing on persons. Because back in my early Christian Science days, when someone would call to me for help, I would think of that person and think, so-and-so is whole and pure and whatever. And now it's like, I'm just knowing God. I'm just not thinking, I'm taking personality out of it. And it's been a very wonderful thing to learn. And I think that this watching point points to that, as far as like him getting that out of his sight and just going up higher.
Thank you. That's an important point made in McDowell Young's Christian Science Practice. Mm-hmm. Don't take the people or the problem.
Yeah, drop it.
Yeah. Anyone else? Those are all very good answers. Yeah, and each case should be met with a freshness and newness, not the same old thing that you're doing year after year. And also, we've been taught here, you know, the loaves and the fishes is kind of the bait. The healing is what brings people to Christian Science. But then it should be so much more than that. And a good practice mm-hmm. is not just about trying to make people's lives comfortable in matter, as we've talked about many, many times. This is far more important. It's the eradication of the belief of sin and the spiritualization of thought, bringing in the millennium, all of these things. And that's what a good practice and a practitioner will do, not just, you know, all this time and time again, healing some matter thing that's going on. And this is especially true for people who have been in science for a long time. It's different when you're new, but when you've been here a long time and you're still just looking for that, the loaves and the fishes, then something's not quite right. Yes?
It's really amazing how many watches in the 500 watching points, so many of them have to do with the fact that we're not trying to have a good human experience through this. That's not why Christian Science is here. Many, many watches are about that.
Yes.
So I reading the biography of Mrs. Eddy, she was very concerned about that, because she saw a lot of the students just couldn't, they were using it for a good, better human experience. And Augusta Stetson sort of fell into that towards the end. And Mrs. Eddy was concerned about that.
And of course, nobody does that today.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Hence the need for the washing points.
Right. And this is why the importance of the carpenter works, because he brings that out, as you said, over and over and over, things mm-hmm. I didn't realize. But yeah, that was what I was all about at first. Yeah. I think most of us are making our lives comfortable. And that will happen as you pursue the science. I mean, your lives should get better anyway, not, you know. That is a byproduct of seeking God mm-hmm. with your whole heart, mind, and soul. A byproduct. Go ahead, Florence.
No, I'm thinking of Job, right? Job, when he started to pray for his friends and stuff, is when he got better, when things changed for him. So it's more, it's the whole thing is a selfless journey, really. This is the way
yes.
I see it.
Yes, it is. It's all that. And when you're just pursuing all of this stuff for your own self, your own good, then things don't work. They won't work, or they might work for a time, but then it'll all fall apart. So this is a major point.
Yeah, and there's a reason why it can't work, because when you do pursue pleasure, you know, more harmony in matter, it's because you're not seeing yourself correctly. Mm-hmm. You're seeing yourself as a mortal right. that needs, you know, that needs more comfort.
And there's only one end.
I'm sorry, what, Florence?
No, wrong identification.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Jeremy?
Oh, and there's only one end for a mortal, so don't identify as a mortal.
Yeah, there's nothing good about that, that's for sure. So these are all tremendous lessons. There's a beautiful story, an article that Carrie sent a while ago. It's called The Fourth Wise Men. And maybe some of you might know that, or The Other Wise Men, I should say. And it's a short story by Van Dyke. It was made into a movie. And it's important for this story or this subject on doctrine of atonement. You know, we know the three wise men who went to the manger and had gifts to bring. Well, this story brings out this other wise man, a fourth wise man. And he had gifts of a sapphire, a ruby, and a pearl. And on his journey there to the manger, he kept finding people in need and in want. And so he took the time to help them. And each time he ended up giving up his sapphire, his ruby, and finally his pearl. And by the time that he got to the Holy Land, 33 years had passed. And he came upon the crucifixion and the resurrection. And each time he was kind of bemoaning that he was taking so long, and then all of this, he'd never get there. But each time he helped. I mean, he stayed at villages and things to help people. And at the end, this from the Bible: "For when I saw thee hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink, when I saw a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee, when I saw thee sick and in prison and came unto thee," you've done it unto the Christ, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So his gift, that was his gift, and that was more important than anything else, truly, right? In the frankincense, mm-hmm. myrrh, yes. It was that. It's a very beautiful story, and it starts with this little poem: "He who seeks for heaven alone to save his soul may keep the path, but will not reach the goal." While he who walks in love will wander far, yet God will bring him where the blessed are. It's very beautiful. And truly, this is the story. This is our at-one-ment. You know, we talk much about being at one with God and claiming that oneness. And most important, claim it in the beginning of the day. Think of it all during the day. But what does that mean as far as our life goes? Does it change our lives? And in another article from, I hope I can find it, another article from Carrie about that, it says that, you know, think about what Jesus did, the end of his life, the love that he expressed to everybody. You know, what was it, Peter chopping off that person's ear? And no, Jesus healed it. He forgave. He loved in all those instances. He loved. That was expressing the at-one-ment, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So in declaring our oneness, make sure we're doing this, letting God express himself through us. We are not God, but God will express himself through us if we allow that. And that's always for healing and doing those beautiful deeds of kindness. So do we have the other wise men on our website? Do you know?
I don't know, but I found it. So we will if we don't.
Okay, good. So most important that we do this. And yes, and that goes back to seeking the loaves and fishes. He who seeks for heaven alone to save his soul may keep the path, but will not reach the goal. While he who walks in love will wander far, yet God will bring him where the blessed are. And that is what Florence just said about an unselfed journey. Unselfed. And the prayer that reforms the sinner and heals the sick is an absolute faith that all things are possible to God, a spiritual understanding of him, and an unselfed love. And unselfed is very different from being unselfish. Unselfed is getting rid of this, a selfhood apart from God, your so-called human personality, letting the passions rule you rather than letting God take over and govern. So all of this takes effort, yes, prayer, effort, mindfulness. Just be aware of what you're thinking each moment.
So I think one of the things about the Christian Christianity has taken over Christians, over a self-righteousness, and have forgotten that one of the major teachings of Christ Jesus was the law of grace. And somehow Christians have lost that. There's more of a self-righteousness rather than a law of grace. It's forgiving and not judging. And somehow the Christian movement has lost that, I think. And there's more of a self-righteousness. That's right.
Yeah, and it is why the youth rejects it, because that isn't really Christianity, is it?
It's very off-putting.
No. Yeah. Jeremy? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, in retrospection and introspection, it Mrs. Eddy says of Jesus that his holy humility, unworldliness, and self-abandonment wrought infinite results. And I think of that all the time. I think that's just beautiful.
That is. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And in this other article Carrie sent about divine oneness, living the divine nature, living this oneness, Jesus was always united in thought with God. His life was an expression of God's love, compassion. When he was betrayed, he didn't share the disciples' indignation, but rebuked it, and didn't rejoice in an enemy's hurt, but healed him. He didn't condemn his would-be murderers, but prayed for them. He had an absolute trust in God that protected him from the opposing or unspiritual thought of those around him. He provided the example of living the divine nature. And then also another article, The Cry in the Desert. Jesus was animated by Christ, the divine nature. In proportion to our holding to the enduring, the good, and the true, will this same Christ, with increasing measure, shine through our humanity as he shone at the last, without measure, through him of Nazareth, feeding the hungry and giving living waters to the thirsty. And in Science and Health, the divinity of Christ was made manifest in the humanity of Jesus.
Someone watches for his argument. It was an affirmation says, I am loving, lovable, and loving. And when I started doing that, you question, why are you such? But unless you're really doing and for others, you can't be lovable. And in fact, you're going to be lovely if you do that by anybody for guys.
Thank you, Craigie. And Craigie is a wonderful example of that kindness, always, always.
Feels good.
Yes. So that's the point. You know, you can declare these things, and I don't know that, all I know is that came from Mrs. Evans. I'm loving, lovable, and lovely. I think I did see it, though, in one of these articles that Carrie has sent. Usually a lot of what we got from Mrs. Evans was from these old articles, journal articles. But yeah, just to declare it, you know, like a parrot over and over doesn't make you that way, does it? You can say it and know that is the truth about you, but then you've got to kind of live it.
Practice. Mm-hmm.
Practice what you preach. So this oneness is so important. You know, some things that I'm still so deep, you can always be learning. That's why we have this subject twice. You know, sometimes I think, goodness me, we've talked about this so many times. What is there anything new to talk about these subjects? But there always is something new, or certainly something to be reminded of.
They're infinite ideas.
We're not doing it yet, so we better be repeating it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, we're not doing it yet. So,
until we ascend, there's more to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I love this from Dominion Within on page 23 by Reverend Kratzer. Jesus' life outwardly was one of the most troubled lives that was ever lived. Tempest and tumult, tumult and tempest, and waves breaking over it all the time. But the inner life was a sea of glass. Great calm was always there. At any moment, you might have gone to him and found rest. And that's Henry Drummond. And think about it. Do you think you could have been in this little boat with a storm going on and everything raging and lightning and thunder and be sleeping like he was? Such confidence in the presence and power of God. And Mrs. Eddy said, too, when she came into science, she began to sleep like a baby. Now, she would wake up easily and work and keep things, you know, a pad by her bed and stuff. But she slept very well. And what's the answer to that? Why?
Peace. She was at peace.
Peace. She was at peace within. And total trust and faith in God. Mm-hmm. So we should have busy and fulfilling days. But at night, I will give my beloved rest. Doesn't have to be, because I know at times I've had a lot of tossing and turning, but it should be a peaceful rest, knowing God's power and presence. If there's work you have to do, yes, well, then maybe you can't sleep until you get that work done through your prayers and mental work. But then the rest should come. the rest should come.
Mary had given me this many years ago from Ralph Waldo Emerson. It says, finish each day and be done with it. You have done what you could. And that helped a lot. So.
I know. I kept that on my desk for a long time. Finish your day and be done with it. You've done the best you can. Don't go on and on about what could have and should have.
So after 207, I sing until I fall asleep.
Oh.
Quietly. And then finally I fall asleep and wake up. It's a peaceful
time. Beautiful. Thank you. So, in the responsive reading, it brings out, you know, that now we are the sons and daughters of God. And another beautiful article, again, by Carrie. I say living as immortals. We should live as we are immortals. And the article is Mortals and Immortals by Reverend Knott. But he says, immortal beings walking the earth in power, Enoch, Moses, Elias, then Jesus, and a glorious company of apostles. Their lives reveal God as the life of man and man as the reflection of God. Beloved, now are we the sons of God. As immortals, we serve him from the kingdom within us, and from this holy of holies comes forth that light which is the source of absolute justice. And the heart of it is love, the activity of it, the power which Jesus wielded, and nothing can withstand. And that's from an old 1893 journal. And that reminded me of something, you know, something that Karen contributed a few months ago, but the Dorothy Reiki article on immortality. And I love where she says, the admission to oneself that man is God's own likeness sets man free to master the infinite idea. This conviction shuts the door on death and opens it wide toward immortality. Now, that's a quote from Mrs. Eddy. But then it says, if such can be accomplished by mere admission, how much more rapid will be our progress if we argue for, claim, declare, affirm our immortality now? The prayer of affirmation is the highest, most powerful form of prayer. Thus, let us first waking thought in the morning and the last at night be one of affirmation and rejoicing that we are immortal. 100 times a day, let us tune in on the infinite and thank our Heavenly Father that we are His immortal children. Rejoice that you are not a mortal housewife washing windows, polishing floors. How wonderful that you are the immortal daughter of the King, living in God's house, serving with gladness and reflecting all his qualities to the fullest. And then it goes on that you're not a weary businessman or newspaper man or all of these things. You are immortal, living in the Father's house. Just feel it, picture it, be there. And don't be thinking of how old you're getting and cranky your bones are. Please stop it. You're immortal now. You're going to last forever. And we've been taught over and over and over, haven't we, that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. We do not have to grow old. We do not have to lose our hearing, our sight, our mobility. Who the heck said that? Who said that? Yes, that was a wonderful testimony, right? Yes. And then in the lesson, you know, we have the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount again. And I was speaking to people this week saying to make sure you're listening to it, reading it, studying it. Mrs. Eddy said if that was all that was preached every Sunday, that would be enough. Do you really know it? You should know it inside and out and think about what it means. We talk a lot about the Beatitudes, and I would like Florence to read her article on the one on meekness because it's so beautiful.
I think I'll probably not all of it because it's quite long, but yeah. Okay. I was just thinking of meekness is a quality to attain if we are to be made whole. The word is vastly misused, as many think of it as meaning weakness. Far from it. It represents the calm strength of one who knows who he is, bends with the Father's will, because he is sure of the power at hand. Such a one walks conforming to whatever shape it is being divinely led to take, because he has no human ambition, but trusts and rests completely in the Father's care. It is an imperative quality. If one is to be restored or put back into his original state of perfection. And that, I will say now, I know it's just being awakened to what you've always been. It is no wonder that the original meaning of the word is liquid. Thus, the ability of all liquids to conform naturally and perfectly to the form they are poured into. The clay in the potter's hands takes the form he molds it into. And then I'll go to, like, in exact contrast is Naaman's pride, the unyielding stiffness that seeks its own will. He disobeyed the prophet Elisha, and when Elisha asked him to go and wash himself in the river Jordan 7 times in order to be healed, to be made whole from leprosy, he lacked the meekness to obey and was not healed until he yielded to the prophet's command and then was redeemed and made whole. It is the Christ that makes whole, as we find in Acts 9:34. Peter said unto him, Ananias, Jesus Christ maketh thee whole. And in Mark 2:17, I am the Lord that healeth thee. Jesus said unto them, they that are whole have no need of the physician, but they that are sick, I came not to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. There is no greater example of meekness than that of our great master's unswerving obedience and perfect conformity to God's will. He was empowered to face the wickedness of a world he so blessed, strengthened during his crucifixion, and triumphed with his ascension. Mrs. Eddy warned that meekness and charity have divine authority, that is in Science and Health 270, line 23. She followed the Christ example and won the crown of rejoicing. It is evident that popularity, superiority, self-righteousness, pride of achievement or intellect, pride of culture, all have no place in meekness. We cannot but emulate this divine quality if we are to be made whole. Yes, up there.
Thank you. Thank you. What's the name of the article so people can find
it? It's Meekness and Restoration.
Thank you.
And that's when Mrs. Eddy says that my question is, are we heeding this from Mrs. Eddy, that the grass beneath our feet silently exclaim, the meek shall inherit the earth? That's
yes.
Science and Health 516, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. I always found that article very helpful.
Yes.
And that definition, you know, to define meekness as liquid.
Yeah.
Because I know along the way here, I found, like, you know, in certain roles, I remember first getting into the role, it felt like the container was too big for me. And then over time, it started feeling tighter. And then it was like God moves you to another container to start filling up. So I don't know. I just love that.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes. And you see, to demonstrate our oneness, we have to be the Sermon on the Mount. Also the Ten Commandments. We have to live them. We have to be them. So And for a lot of people who say, I read the lesson, I declare this, I declare that. Well, you can declare it all you want, but how much are you living it? How much do you feel it? What would your responses have been right before you're about to get crucified to these people? Would you have demonstrated in that compassion and love toward everyone? And it was that love, that divine love, that enabled him, Christ, to rise from the seeming dead. In this article, The Unity of the Sermon on the Mount, also given by Carey, says the thunder of Sinai, this is from Science and Health, and the Sermon on the Mount are pursuing and will overtake the ages, rebuking in their course all error and proclaiming the kingdom of heaven on earth. So how powerful that we do this. The subject of this discourse of the Master is the kingdom of heaven. Its opening theme is the promises of the kingdom. These are known as the Beatitudes. And in a couple of articles, she sent the first four are promises of the kingdom and also shows you true repentance, which must be, you have to be in that state of repentance in order to go to the next. The second four are the responsibilities of the citizenship of the kingdom. And it's interesting. I'm sure we're going to have these articles on our online because I can't go into them all. But it's interesting to see them that way and to realize how instructive they are, the Beatitudes. I know I memorized them in Sunday school, but there's no end to what unfolds, right? There's no end to it. And many wonderful articles about them. And then this, too. This was an article that Carey sent a while ago, but I loved it so much from that Isaiah, thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. And it was by Blanche Hershey Hogue, Divine Companionship. And the living companionship with the divine presence, and that is mental fidelity to God. This is obedience to the first commandment. Mental fidelity to God. Watching your every thought coming into obedience to the Christ. It gives us plenty to think about during the day, but we're always thinking something, so why not think this truth, right?
Yes.
Have God. People who think they're lonely. Well, you've got the divine companionship with you.
Yeah.
And thinking about him, about God, you will feel his presence and power with you, and it'll be amazing, wonderful. And really no other companionship do you need. That one must always come first before you can have any other real companionship. You must have that. Mm-hmm. And then the other companions come, but God must be in the middle of it.
Otherwise, you can feel very lonely when you're companioned with the wrong...
Yes, the wrong people or the wrong thoughts.
Yeah.
Craig, did you want to say something?
I was... saying that the Beatitudes, as you said, it's so important, but it's easy if you don't really think about them to assume that you're prepared.
Thank you.
Like persecuted for righteous sake, when you're in a jam, you have to stand for right or wrong. If you haven't been practicing or preparing yourself, it's not always the first thing you'll do.
Thank you. Carrie, did you want to say something?
Mm-mm.
Well. So make the Sermon on the Mount yours, become it, be it. And that will eliminate all the self-righteous stuff that Karen was talking about. It's the Pharisees and the Sadducees. It's not a pretty picture. So live this truth. And then even those, Jesus was attempting to heal them, and that required mighty rebukes at times because they were so stubborn about it. But so we must as well.
Definitely. Right?
Yes.
And because they didn't listen, Jerusalem was destroyed.
Yes. Yes. And in this oneness, other than our science and health and prose works, you know, Bigdell Young has an incredible article, Oneness, with about and that we are not some person appealing to a God afar off, but that God is actually our consciousness when we allow him to be. We are at one with him. We're good because he is good. We're intelligent because he is intelligent. He is right with us. It's an amazing. I remember the first time I read it, it like clicked with me. I finally was getting some understanding on what that oneness meant. We see because he sees. We hear because he hears. Not because we have something in our head, something that's supposed to do something. It's God doing it all. And if we know that, we will be ageless, diseaseless, and deathless because God made us so. Now, in going through my notes. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Florence.
No, no, that all that he is what we are.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's true oneness. Mm-hmm. Now, going through my notes today, I found something very beautiful. I know I've shared this before, but I'm going to share it again. It's about Mary Baker Eddy's great-granddaughter. And we're waiting. Tom visited. Where was Mrs. Eddy's child? Was it North Dakota or South Dakota? Oh, we don't have Bruce here.
Right. Maybe South Dakota.
Yeah, Fargo. Anyways, one of those places where he settled and she built them a home and even a church there. And he was there and he took pictures of all of this and he studied about her children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, Tom from New York. Yeah. And he was going to put it in the newsletter soon. And I hope he's listening because, Tom, I'm a-waiting on you. It happened a while ago. And I think it would be so fascinating to have it in our newsletter. So anyway, this has been in our Liberator. And it is this. This is first from Mrs. Eddy's granddaughter. Bless you all. Mary Baker Eddy's truths are marching on through people like you. I accept your pamphlet in the love it was sent to me. I'm sure Grandmother Eddy never intended her church to end in Boston or controlled by the directors to the extent it is at this time. I thank God for people like you in Plainfield who keep her words alive. With love, Mrs. Eddy's granddaughter. That was in the Healing Thoughts from November 1987. Then in 1988, received your letter today. Enclosed is a small check for the fund for your fight for right thinking and freedom from those in Boston who are destroying the true church of Mary Baker Eddy. I only wish it were for 1,000 times more. I would also like to receive information on how I can become a member of your church. It is time one of her great-grandchildren became a member of the one and only church that is truly following what she taught. Mrs. Eddy's great-granddaughter. This is Healing Thoughts, May 1988. Thank you for your very prompt and loving answer to my last letter. It is my joy to join your church. I am the one who should and does come to you with great humility. You are the ones who have fought and won a glorious victory in the name of Christian Science and Mrs. Eddy. She must be very proud of each and every one of you. I seldom use my maiden name, for my family, brothers and sister, have had many problems because of our relationship to Mrs. Eddy. I have been told that the board of directors of the Mother Church would be very happy if we did not exist, or at least some of them feel that way about her family. That is truly hard for me to understand. I cannot.
Gosh.
If it weren't written to us, I couldn't. Please understand. I do not expect any special privileges because I am Mrs. Eddy's great-granddaughter. I come to you as just another member of the Christian Science family. Signed, Mrs. Eddy's great-granddaughter. And then May 1988, Healing Thoughts. Thank you for letting me join your church, our church now. What a beautiful way to start a new year and a glorious Christmas gift of love. I will be with you each Wednesday and Sunday in spirit. It's such a warm feeling to have a church, home, and family once more. My love to each and every one of you. I, too, am looking forward to our association. Mrs. Eddy's great-granddaughter. Now, the first one, I guess, was signed by her granddaughter, so she must have passed on, and then this has been her great-granddaughter. And then this, which I'll have Gary end with. So all very touching. So when we were so blessed to have this communication. My understanding from Tom is that a lot of her family members, the ones who are here, moved on and are in California now, most of them anyway. So Gary will end with this.
This is Eddie's great-granddaughter, reprinted from the February 2000 newsletter. Dear friends, during this season of love, I'd like to share a story with you. It is a story of a gift of love, the greatest gift I have ever received. In 1985, late October, my brother Bill, wife of Evelyn, and my sister Mary joined me on our first visit to Boston and New Hampshire. We were invited to join a tour group from Longyear to visit the homes of Mary Baker Eddy that they own and maintain. It was a cold day. Rain fell off and on. One of our last stops was at Bow. The sun had come out, but it was still quite cool. As we stood on that quiet hillside, I was thinking of a young Mary flitting over the fields or sitting and reading quietly by a corner of her childhood home. My sister, Mary, and I were standing where the rocks outlining the Baker home formed a V-shaped, sheltered corner. Mary and I looked down. There at our feet was a wild violet in full bloom. The violet was the color our dad had so often told us was the color of his grandmother's eyes. Both my sister and I felt that only she could have left this lovely, loving gift for us to find. She was with us as we stood there, welcoming us to her home. Others in the group suggested we pick the flowers. We could only shake our heads. No. We both felt this was a gift so great it had to be left untouched where it had been placed. On our journey back to Boston, the sun came out again, and stretched across the sky was a glorious rainbow, as she had promised in her poetry. Was there a special reason for the violets and rainbow? We can only answer with our hearts. Love, the greatest of all gifts. Mary and I talked about this experience many times. It is a true story. One I've never written down before, but want to now share with my Plainfield Christian Science family. We never shared this gift of love with those in Boston, as we felt they would try to explain it away. My love to all of you, Dorothy Glover MacArthur. Dorothy Glover MacArthur spent her last years as a member of the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very beautiful.